Thank you for visiting stormthecastle.com or castlefiction.com. You are listening to the podcast audio novel, Lion's Last Kill. It's an epic fantasy novel, and this installment is Chapter 8. His sleep was not sound. He had many bad dreams, the worst of which was with the Oracle. He dreamt that she was angry with him. He stood before her naked, and she shouted her anger at him. It was so loud that it felt like the mountain was going to collapse. He woke in a sweat, and it was very early in the pre-dawn. The sun would be breaking in another hour, and Varga would be sending someone around to get him soon. He reached over for Petra, but she was gone. A shock of alarm went through him, and he sat up. He could hear something in the other room, and the scent of breakfast being cooked came to him, so he relaxed. She had probably not slept at all, and now she was making breakfast. More to keep herself busy, because neither of them would eat much this morning. He lay his head back down and thought about his dream of the Oracle. Every world has its mysteries, and in his world there were plenty. The people there thought they had it all figured out. They thought everything was explainable. But some things defied explanation. On his world, he had found the Cavern of Lightning, which was a place that defied all explanation. And here, on this world, was the Oracle, which also defied all explanation. When he had first come here, it had taken about 5 years to get everything stabilized, and in that time he had made several hundred trips back and forth through the Threadbender. And when everything was stabilized, and they had rid enough of the countryside of Blightbeast and Breck, they had started making expeditions further out into the world. And high on his list was a trip to the Oracle. It had been something that was only told in tales, for not many men had actually traveled to it for several generations. But everything about it rang true, and they went to see if it really existed. And after an arduous trip that took them more than a month, they did finally get there. And that was when he told the Oracle about the plight of his own world and about the machine he would build to save it. It had taken a month last time because the world was a more dangerous place. In the 10 years that had passed since then, the army had mounted regular expeditions into the wild lands to hunt and kill the beasts of hate, and these expeditions were very successful. In the early years, the Breck had mounted counterattacks on the castle, but they grew weaker and weaker, and it had been several years now since the castle had been sieged. Their superiority was assured now. The technology and the techniques that Bosch had taught them had assured them of this. His mastery of their art of Skryn and his using it to build machines of communication alone would have been enough. The beasts fought only as far as they could see, but their army could communicate and see over long distances, so they could scout out areas and move troops as needed. Information was always the key in any war. The army with the best information almost always won, providing they had the troops to back it up with, and they did. They had a good-sized army now totaling several thousand, and they had 3 cities. Their farmlands were extending every year, and the health of their soldiers and people had improved significantly, while the creatures of the Blight were forced to continue living poorly, as they always had. He forced himself out of bed and made his way to the doorway, where he saw Petra cooking over the stove. He just stood and looked at her, and they both enjoyed the moment. He enjoyed looking at her, and she enjoyed being looked at. He sat down at the table, and she laid out 2 plates, and filled them with food that was overcooked to the point of not being edible. It didn't matter. Neither of them even picked up their forks, and after a minute of them staring at it, she got out of her chair and came over, and putting her arm around his neck, she sat on his lap. In the silence and the thin slivers of the breaking morning, he thought his heart would break. "This is the last time, love. I will do this no more. I will go to the Oracle. I will finish the machine. Then I will come here to stay with you." He had never said anything like this, so she knew he meant it. But she didn't say anything, and he thought he could hear her heart beating against his chest. They just stared at his food while tears flowed down her face onto his neck and down his chest. She wept silently, and it just further pulled at his heart that the pain inside her was so strong that she would cry. He had never seen her cry before, and now that she did, it was in silence. The tears just flowed freely, It was a dozen years of desire and fear that had all come out in one flowing river. Staring at his food, he wondered whether she cried for the fear that he wouldn't return, or for the joy that he had made this promise to her. She had never asked for him to make a promise, but they both knew she had always wanted it. A knock at the door broke their silence. It was his escort and wake-up call. He picked her up as he stood, then he gently placed her wobbly feet on the cold floor and hugged her. He left without ever looking back. He refused to see her like this. He had done this to her, with years of unrequited love and yearning. He had been selfish and driven by demons that neither he nor she could explain. But there was one thing that he could explain. It was the feeling that whatever it took, he would get through this, and he would change everything between the two of them. He would give up everything in his home world, and he would come here to stay. He would ensure she would never feel this again. As he shut the door and made his way to the war room, he had to fight the urge to make a stop at the threadbender. He could pass there right now and take a hammer to it. Then he couldn't go back. He would hammer it into a pile of rubble. Then he could forget about the machine and his little jaunt to the Oracle. He could be back here with Petra in an hour, and it would all be done. The guard waited patiently outside, and he bowed and was startled as Grell appeared out of seemingly nowhere. The three of them turned without a word and headed for the war room. Along the way, Bosch thought about what it was like to be a human being. He knew that he loved Petra, and she was in pain. Pain that he had caused all these years, and all he wanted to do was relieve her of that. Take it onto his own shoulders. Was that so wrong? There was a whole world, his home, that was struggling with catastrophe, and the machine was the last chance to fix it. But that world seemed like a dream. It was almost not real. This feeling of that other world came to him often, and it got stronger the longer he stayed here. Normally it took months, and he would have to go back through the threadbender to reinforce his sense that his own world did exist. But this time it only took 3 days. Only 3 days, and he was already doubting its existence. It was just that this world seemed so much more alive than the other one. Everything here seemed more grounded in what being human was all about. Everything was simpler and more to the point of existence. He grimaced at this thought because his coming here and the things that he brought was changing all of that. His very presence and his mind was making everything here more complex. Sometimes he couldn't bear this dilemma. He got the feeling sometimes that he was actually ruining the thing he most wanted to save. When they arrived at the war room, Bosch's escort excused himself and hurried off. The room was quiet. There were just a few soldiers going over some maps at the main table, so Bosch and his bodyguard walked through it at the far end and went down the stairs to the courtyard. It was bustling with action. There were horses everywhere, and they were all being saddled and packed. Soldiers were scurrying about, and several commanders were barking orders. A soldier met Bosch and his bodyguard and showed them to their horses, which were at the front of the courtyard nearest the wooden gates that opened up to the outside world. Bosch's horse had a single blue flag on each side of the saddle. Grell's was unmarked. Several soldiers were walking around with bread and dried meat, and everybody was eating as they prepared to leave. It was a military-style breakfast. Don't enjoy it, just eat it quick, and eat plenty of it. It meant strength, and that meant everything in battle. Another soldier, a sergeant by the rank on his sleeve, stopped and looked Bosch over. Then grabbed a private by the collar and barked orders in his ears. A few minutes later, the private returned with a change of clothes for Bosch. They were more suitable for riding. Bosch changed into them right there and glanced at the sergeant in a look of thank you. The sergeant smiled and nodded. He had never met this particular sergeant before and was grateful. Varga had trained his fighting force well. They weren't just drones. They could think on their feet and make decisions quickly. This was a good sign. These would be good men to have at your side in times of trouble. Varga made his appearance at the doorway and walked around the courtyard. Everything started to fall into place and soldiers mounted their horses. Varga received reports from several of his commanders, and after looking over several horses that were packed with supplies, he climbed up on his own horse at the front of the group alongside Bosch and several others. Bosch noticed that the sergeant who had gotten him some decent riding clothes was also in the first group. with military precision, which was typical of Varga, and as the sun broke the plane of the horizon, he ordered the large double-door gate to be opened, and with the turning of massive winches, it did, and the group made their way out of the castle and into the fields around. By mid-morning, the excitement of the big adventure had worn off, and the reality of the trip had set in. They were just traveling on the horses at a walking pace, and this constant jarring was bringing to life muscles that Bosch had forgotten about. It would take him a few days to get his riding muscles back. Until then, his legs and back would be very sore. It tempted him to kick his horse into a gallop just to hurry things along, but he knew this was no way to do it. The horse could only gallop for so long. And by the end of a day of this, that horse would either be dead or useless. That was a pace that could not be kept up. Bringing the horses to a faster pace was only done in times of battle or dire emergency. At one point during the morning's march, he pulled his horse up alongside the new sergeant. You're new in the army. He was young. Bosch guessed him to be in his early 20s. And he still wasn't immune to Bosch's presence. He seemed to blush a little at the acknowledgement. No, sir. Been in almost 4 years. Not a bad accomplishment. You made sergeant in less than 4 years. Bosch could see the man sit up a little taller at the compliment. Oh, what's your name there, sergeant? It's Mazer, sir. Bosch nodded his head at this, and Varga, overhearing the exchange, stepped into the conversation. Fine young soldier. He's been to Hoch. It did some low-level climbs. He's going to be our climb master. There aren't many mountains in this world, unlike your world. He chuckled at this. There was a double entendre in this. He and Bosch had had many conversations about Bosch's home world. Most of it revolved around the military and how it operated and how it was structured. But Varga had always had comments about the complexity of Bosch's world. The double entendre referred to this complexity as if the landscape were a parallel of it. Only one mountain on this world, and it's our destination. At that he laughed, and this made Bosch laugh. It just felt good to see Varga loosen up a little. He must have gotten a good night's sleep, and everything must be going according to his meticulous planning. They worked their way slowly through well-cultivated farmlands. Many farmers and workers along the way stopped their work in the fields to rush to the fences to get a good look at the procession. They probably all knew that the procession was coming through. It was impossible to keep a secret in this world. Word got around faster than telephone back home could carry it. This did give Bosch cause to pause. If the villagers and farmers knew about the departure, then surely the assassins and whoever was behind them would also know about it. It would be silly to attempt an assassination in the middle of a group of well-armed soldiers, wouldn't it? Or would it be the perfect opportunity? He spent the rest of the day going over tidbits of information with Babbage. He was looking for clues about the snake that swallows its own tail. He reviewed many conversations, but because he didn't specifically make a note with Babbage about the conversation, he couldn't recall whom in this world he had told this story to. He just continued to review conversations and cross-reference them with people and places. It was in there somewhere, and when he discovered who it was he had told this legend to, he probably knew who had formed this bodyguard guild, and he had the sneaking suspicion that that would lead him to the assassins. They broke several times during the first day to eat and to feed and water the horses. The weather was beautiful, as late summer days could be. The mornings were still warm and everything was pleasant. The soldiers were professional and in good spirits. They made it to the farthest farmlands by the end of the day, and they made camp on the outskirts of the grasslands for the night. In the morning, they would continue their journey, but Bosch was sure that the mood would change tomorrow. Although not particularly dangerous, were sparsely populated and less well known. There were dangers, so they would send out scouts ahead and ride soldiers to their flanks to keep a lookout. So as the first day ended, so did the pleasantness of the ride. Bosch turned into his sleeping bag that night with very sore muscles. He almost couldn't walk with the soreness of them. It was a dreamless night for him, and that was a relief. There was a nagging anxiety of having to face the Oracle in his dreams again. It was enough of a challenge to face her in the waking world. but in the waking world he did have some control. In the dream world it seemed that she pretty much ruled supreme and called all the shots, and he didn't like having no control. He lay in his bag and listened as the soldiers dug a speak stone out of one of the packs, and he fell asleep watching Varga speak into the stone that was about the size of a man's head. In the reverie between the sleeping and waking worlds, he imagined it was a head. He slept the sleep of the dead. His body was too exhausted from the day's traveling. Even though he really didn't do anything, he was still drained of all his energy. The second day was a little better for him. His body was sore from the previous day, but it felt like a healthy sore. His back was stiff, but it was responding better than he thought it would. Early in the morning, they crossed the border between the farmlands and the wild grasslands. The gentle rolling of the landscape didn't change much, but the vegetation and animal life did. The grass was growing wild, and in some spots it climbed as high as the waist of the horses. When they got to spots like this, they slowed down. The horses couldn't see their footing, so it was dangerous to just push them forward. A leg could be easily broken in this terrain. All it took was a small hole. During midday, they made camp, and Varga sent out a hunting party and two scouting parties to sweep the area. He and his commanders then went over the maps to see if they could avoid some of the higher grass. The visibility was poor in this tall grass, and it made an ambush rather easy. They decided to take a more southerly course that would then take them to a higher elevation in the plains. It would add a little time to the journey, but Varga thought that the extra time would be worth the reduced risk. It meant that they ran the chance of not catching up with the caravan that had continued on the more direct path. By the end of that second day, they had made their way to the higher ground, where the grass was lower and the visibility was better. One of the scouting groups had gotten word to them that they had indeed passed to the south of the resupply caravan, and that all was well with the caravan. Everything seemed to be going well, and other than the fact that they varied from their course by a few miles to the south, they were right on schedule and following their plan. This is the end of Chapter 8.